Chapter 31. Who? I asked. Barak glanced at Piers. Guy turned to the boy.
Would you fetch my horse to the front of the house?
He asked. Piers hesitated for a moment, then went out. Barak looked between us. His face was set hard.
It's Lockley's wife.
He has killed a woman?
Guy gasped.
Sir Thomas sent a man round to keep guard at the inn. He was too late. He found her lying on the inn floor. She's been mutilated.
The message said something strange, something about poisoned air.
We're to join Arsenet there at once.
What about Lockley?
I don't know.
Through the window I saw Piers leading Guy's old white mare round to the front. We went outside.
May I come too?
Piers asked Guy as we mounted.
No, Piers. You have studying to do. You should have done it last night.
The apprentice stepped back, an expression of angry sulkiness momentarily crossing his face.
How much does that boy know about what's been happening?
I asked Guy as we rode quickly up the street.
Only that there has been a series of murders. He couldn't fail to see that,
Guy added with a touch of asperity.
As he has been helping me at the autopsies. He knows he must hold his tongue.
You know he listens at doors,
I said. Guy didn't reply. We rode on rapidly up to Smithfield and on to Charterhouse Square. The square was deserted except for two men standing at the door of the inn under the sign of the Green Man. One was Harsnett and the other was a tall man carrying a sword who was coughing into a handkerchief. I saw some of the beggars standing by the chapel looking on from a distance but not daring to approach. We pulled up and tied the horses to the rail next to Harsnett's. Guy went over to the tall man.
What ails you? He asked quietly.
The man lowered his handkerchief. He was in his 20s with a neat black beard. He stared for a moment at Guy's dark face, then said,
I don't know. I came here 2 hours ago. I knocked, but could get no answer.
He coughed violently again.
The shutters were all closed, so I broke in. There's a woman lying on the floor. She's mutilated.
He spluttered noisily.
There's something in the air in there. It's poisonous. It burns at my throat.
Let me see, Guy said.
He gently opened the man's mouth and looked in.
Something's irritated your throat, he said. Sit down on the step. Try to breathe easy.
It was horrible. Like something grasping to take your breath.
I looked at the door. The lock was smashed. The guard had pulled it shut again when he came out.
Have you been inside?
I asked Harsnett.
No. I looked in. One sniff was enough. It's like this fellow said, like something trying to rip your throat out.
He looked at Guy.
How do you come to be here, sir?
I was with Dr. Moulton when the message came, I said. Dr. Moulton may be able to help us.
Guy, what do you think can have happened to the air? There is only one way to see.
He pulled a handkerchief from his pocket, held it to his nose, and threw the door wide open. I took a step back as something sharp and stinging caught my nostrils. Guy went in. With the shutters drawn, the interior was dark. I made out a large, pale shape spotted with darker patches lying under the open serving hatch. A body. Guy stepped rapidly to the shutters, throwing them open. A draught of fresh air was immediately drawn into the room with the light. We looked in from the doorway. I saw the tavern was in chaos, overturned chairs and tables everywhere. The pale shape under the serving hatch was indeed Mistress Bunce, lying face down on the stone floor. Her coif had been removed, revealing her long dark hair. Her dress had been pulled up to beneath her armpits, and her underskirt torn off. It lay bundled up under one of the tables. Her plump, pale body was half naked, her arms tied behind her with rope.
Shit!
Barak breathed. I saw red weals at her wrists where the poor woman had struggled to free herself, but the knots were tight. There was another piece of cloth lying beside her face, something dark red on top of it.
"Dear God, what has he done to her?"
Harsnett breathed. I saw his hands were clenched tight. Guy crossed to the body and stood looking down at it. Quickly, he crossed himself. Harsnett, watching from the doorway, narrowed his eyes at the gesture.
"It is safe to come in," Guy said quietly. "The fumes are dispersing. But put handkerchiefs to your noses and mouths. Take shallow breaths."
Harsnett and Barrack and I drew out our handkerchiefs and stepped cautiously inside.
"What was that stuff?"
Barrack asked.
"Vitriol," Guy answered, "in a very powerful concentration."
We looked down at the body. The white flesh on the trunk and legs bore big red marks that looked like burns. To my horror, half the woman's posterior had been burned away, leaving a huge, monstrous red wound. Yet there was no blood around her, only a pool of colourless liquid.
"What is this vitriol?"
Harsnett asked Guy. The air was much clearer, but there was still a faint, harsh tang.
"For God's sake, what did he do to her?"
His voice rose.
"Vitriol is a liquid that burns and dissolves everything it touches," Guy answered grimly. "It is well known. Alchemists make it up frequently to dissolve stone. They think it has special powers because gold is one of the few things it cannot destroy. It must have taken hours to do this, using repeated applications."
Then Guy did something I'd never seen him do before, no matter what awful things he had to look upon. He shuddered violently. Harsnett bent to the liquid under the body.
"What's this?"
He put out a finger.
"Don't touch it!"
Guy shouted, and Harsnett quickly stepped away. Guy took a spatula from the pocket of his robe and touched it to the liquid. There was a faint hiss and it began to smoke.
"Vitriol," he said. "See how it has eaten into the wood? It has even marked the stone flags."
"If it's so poisonous," I asked, "how did he manage to wait here for hours?"
"I suspect it was night, and he had those large shutters giving onto the yard open. Even so, he would need to keep going over to the window."
Barrack was looking through the serving hatch. Cups and pewter goblets stood on a draining board. More lay in the washing bowl. It seemed the killer had come just after the tavern closed. Perhaps he had been a late customer.
"Janley!" Harsnett called.
The guard entered reluctantly, staring with horrified eyes at the mutilated corpse.
"Search the rest of the building," Harsnett ordered. "Go on!"
Reluctantly, his hand on his sword, Janley opened a door to the inner chambers and stepped through.
"Was it Lockley?" I breathed. "Is he the killer?"
"Perhaps Lockley's been killed too. Perhaps he's in another room," Barrack said.
He wiped his brow. He was sweating. "And the fifth angel poured out his vial upon the seat of the beast." I quoted from the Book of Revelation, the chapters we all knew now. "And his kingdom waxed dark, and they gnawed their tongues for pain and blasphemed the God of heaven for sorrow and pain of their sores and repented not of their deeds." Guy bent and very carefully turned the brutalized body over. He let out a groaning sigh. I made myself look at Mistress Bunce's face. The lower half was covered with blood. I will never forget the eyes, wide open, bulging from her face in her last horror and agony. Guy felt her jaw, then took out his spatula and gently touched the piece of cloth beside her face and the red thing on top of it. He took a corner of the cloth and covered it.
"What?"
I asked.
"It's her tongue. He gagged her with this cloth while he tortured her. Then, at the end, he removed it. to fulfill the part of the verse that talks of gnawing tongues. He pulled out the tongue and snapped her jaw shut on it.
He touched the slack face.
Yes, he broke her jaw doing it. At some point after that she died. Her heart probably gave out.
What sort of creature could do this to a woman? Harsnett asked, incredulous.
She's not the first person he's tortured to death, Barrack said. The cotter was cut up and left to die. But this is even worse.
When the Bible talks of the seat of the beast, Harsnett said, it means the place ruled by the devil, not a human. A human rear. This is like some idiot's blasphemous joke. A devil's jest.
We all turned as Janley returned through the inner door.
There's nothing, he said. The rest of the house looks normal.
Did Lockley do this? Harsnett asked.
Barrack looked at me.
Begins to seem like he's the killer after all.
I still can't see it. I could see him having knowledge of Dwale. But what about the legal knowledge that letter to Roger demonstrated? I wouldn't have said Lockley was someone who could write a proper letter.
Then where is he?
Harsnett burst out. The terrible scene had unnerved him deeply.
Lockley vanished and Mrs. Bunt's dead, I said quietly.
Goddard vanished and Cantrell attacked. The three who worked at the Westminster Infirmary.
Surely Goddard attacked the other two, Harsnett said.
It could equally be that Lockley attacked Goddard and Cantrell.
Goddard's body could be hidden somewhere.
I shook my head.
That woman didn't work at the infirmary, Harsnett said. She wasn't even a religious woman, from what you told me.
He glanced at the terrible corpse, then turned to Janley.
For God's sake, cover her up!
The young man took his handkerchief and laid it over Ethel Bunce's ruined face. He looked green. The awful wounds below still lay exposed. Guy stood, fetched the undershirt from where it had been thrown by the killer, and covered them.
You are from Thomas Seymour's household?
I asked Janley.
Yes, I am his master of horse.
I warrant you didn't expect a horror like this.
No, sir. I was sent to guard a tavern.
He laughed then, a little hysterically. I turned to Barrack.
I think we should give this house a full search. Come on, let's start with the living quarters.
We walked up the narrow wooden staircase. There were two bedrooms. The one where Lockley and Mrs. Bunce slept together had a cheap truckle bed. There was no other furniture save a large chest full of women's clothes.
Poor bloody bitch, Barrack said as he searched through them. I think Lockley killed her. It can't have been Goddard.
Why not?
Because he would have had to reconnoitre the tavern, find out their routines and whether anyone else lived here. I can't think of any way to do that other than coming in as a customer. If it was Goddard, Lockley would have recognised him and told us, surely.
That makes sense, I said.
I looked at the cheap worn dresses and large underclothes that Barrack had laid on the bed. The violation of the last privacy of the poor woman downstairs felt like a further humiliation of her.
Come, put those back. Let's see what's in the other room.
The second bedroom contained broken chairs and other odds and ends, and another chest locked with a padlock. I set Barrack to picking it, a skill he had learned in his days working for Cromwell. After a couple of minutes, he heaved the lid open to reveal men's clothes this time, but at the bottom, there were a number of small wooden boxes. Barrack took out the boxes and began opening them. One contained £2 in assorted coins, another some cheap jewellery. But the next contained something very different, a wooden block with a hinge in the shape of a human jaw.
There were holes where teeth could be placed.
"What the hell is this?" Barrack asked.
"A block to set dentures in," I said quietly. I took it from him. Remember Tamasin told us the tooth drawer showed her one? They set teeth in those sockets and fix them in people's mouths. There's an old barrister's wife at Linker's Inn who has dentures, but she can't get a block to fit properly. They keep falling out.
"Maybe she could try some of these," Barrack said.
He had opened the remaining four boxes and all contained denture blocks in different sizes.
"What's he got these for?" he asked incredulously. "Lockley wasn't a barber surgeon, was he? He worked for one and left."
I turned the ugly wooden things over in my hands. The blocks had never been used to house teeth. There were no traces of glue in the tooth holes. Pictures in my mind came together, some pieces of the puzzle fitting together at last. "No," I said quietly. "He wasn't. I think he was something quite different. Now I understand. Now I see what they were being so secretive about. Come, we have to go to Dean Benson, now. Bring those boxes." I led the way downstairs. Guy and Harsnett had both sat down at a table marked with the round rings from 100 goblets of beer. Harsnett looked agitated, Guy drawn and sad. Janley stood by the window, staring out on the tavern yard. Harsnett looked up.
"Anything?"
he asked. "Yes," I said. "We need to go to the Dean." I broke off as there was a sudden loud rumbling noise and the flagstones trembled beneath our feet. Harsnett's eyes widened.
"What in God's name is that?"
"This place is connected to the old Charterhouse sewer system," I said. "They must have opened the sluice gate over there. It happened when we came here before." "We ought to investigate that cellar. There'll be a way down somewhere."
"I'll help good man Janley look," Barrack said.
He laid the boxes of teeth on the counter. I glanced over at the body. "What will you do with it?" I asked Harsnett.
"Store it in my cellars at Whitehall, with Yarrington."
He gave me an anguished look.
"And keep quiet."
I nodded.
"Why did you say we must go to the Dean?"
"I think I know what he's been holding back."
"We've found a cellar,"
Barrack called from inside the house.
"There's a metal hatch in the hallway."
"We ought to see what's down there," I said. I went into the stone-flagged hallway, Harsnett following. Barrack had raised the hatchway and stood looking down. There was a ladder. Cold air came from below. Janley appeared with a lamp, a lighted candle inside. Barrack took a deep breath.
"Right, let's have a look."
"Be careful," I said. But there was nothing to see in the cellar. The candlelight showed only bare stone flags, barrels stacked against the walls. Barrack and Janley found another hatch there, leading down to the sewers. Janley opened it and we caught a whiff of sewer smells.
"Should we go on down?"
Janley asked, peering nervously into the darkness.
"No," Barrack said. "Listen."
There was a sound of rushing water, faint, then suddenly loud as someone up at the Charterhouse opened the sluice gates to flush more excess water through. The building shook again, and a rush of vile-smelling air was pushed upwards into the cellar and out through the hatchway to where we stood.
"That's a lot of water,"
Barrack called up.
"With all the rain, the ponds at Islington are probably full to overflowing," Harsnett said.
Barrack and Janley climbed back up and we returned to the main room. Guy rose from his knees by the body, rushes and dust clinging to his robe. He had been praying.
"What is Benson holding back?" Harsnett asked.
"I'll tell you on the way. We..." There was a knock at the door, faint and hesitant. We looked at each other. Harsnett called,
"Come in."
And the door opened. An elderly couple
stepped nervously inside. Both were small and thin, grey-haired, poor folk. They looked at us, and then at the thing on the floor. The woman let out a little scream and ran back outside. The man turned to follow, but Harsnett called him back. Through the open door we saw his wife standing trembling on the steps.
"Who are you?"
Harsnett asked him roughly.
"We lodge next door,"
the man said in a thin voice. He rubbed his hands together nervously.
"We heard all the noise. We wondered what was happening."
"Mistress Bunce has been murdered. Master Lockley has disappeared. I am Master Harsnett, the King's assistant coroner."
"Oh."
"Please bring your wife inside. We wish to question you."
"She's upset," he said,
but Harsnett's look was unyielding. The old man went outside and brought his wife back. She clung to him, avoiding looking at the body.
"We think this happened last night," I said, "after the tavern closed. Did either of you hear anything?"
The old man stared at Guy, his dark face and long physician's robe, as though wondering how he had appeared there.
"Last night," Harsnett repeated impatiently.
"There was a lot of noise at closing time."
"When was that?"
"They shut at 12. We were in bed. The noise woke us. It sounded like tables going over. But you get rough people in this tavern now, beggars from the chapel when they have any money. We knew Francis had gone. Ethel has been in a frantic state, asking everyone round the square if they'd seen him. She liked to rule the roost, poor Ethel."
He looked around the room, then down at the covered body.
"Did some drunkard kill her?"
"Yes. You heard nothing later on in the night?"
"No."
The woman began to cry.
"Oh, please let us out of here."
"In a minute. How well did you know Mistress Bunce and good man Lockley?"
"We've lived next to the tavern for 10 years. We knew Master Bunce before he died. He kept a quiet house. He was a godly man."
"What do you mean?" I asked. The neighbour looked between us nervously.
"Only that he belonged to one of the radical congregations. If you talked to him for any length of time, he would always bring the Bible and salvation into it."
"Yet he kept a tavern?"
Harsnett sounded incredulous. The old man shrugged.
"I think he was converted after he bought it. It was his living. And, as I say, he kept it very orderly. No swearing or fighting. And he kept it closed Sundays,"
his wife added. She looked at the covered body and crossed herself.
"Ethel had a hard time of it. A woman trying to run a tavern alone."
"When did she take up with Lockley?"
"Francis. He came about 2 years ago. First as a pot man, then they got together."
She shook her head.
"I've sometimes thought Eddie Bunce must be turning in his grave, Ethel taking up with an ex-monk."
"She didn't try to bring Master Lockley into her husband's congregation?" She shook her head again.
"No, we never heard any more about Bible truth after Eddie died. And the tavern began opening on Sundays. She must have left the church."
"Got a noisier type of customer in,"
her husband added gloomily. Harsnett and I exchanged glances. So Mistress Bunce was an apostate from a radical congregation like the others.
"Which church did Master Bunce go to?" Harsnett asked.
"Clerkenwell. Those radicals had better watch out with Bishop Bonner after them."
"Did Mistress Bunce have any living relatives that you know of?"
"No, sir. We didn't know them well."
He looked at the body again.
"She was decent enough, Ethel. Though Francis could be a grump, even if they did live in sin." "We would like to go to the funeral,"
his wife said. The old man looked at us.
"Please, sir, what do you think happened?"
"We only ask because we wonder if we're safe, if there are robbers about."
"You're not in any danger," Harsnett said. But that is all I can tell you till we investigate further. In the meantime, this is to be kept quiet. You tell no one Mrs. Bunce is dead. It could hamper our investigation.
But how...
You will keep quiet. I order it in the King's name. A guard will remain here for now. Thank you for your help, he concluded in a tone of dismissal. Harsnett shook his head after the old man led his wife away. Poor old creatures, he said. Come then, Matthew. If we're to go to Westminster now, I want to know what you've puzzled out. Janley, stay here. Secure that door and keep inquirers away. I'll arrange for the body to be removed. Can I go home? Guy asked. Yes, Harsnett answered shortly.
He still didn't like or trust Guy, it was clear. With most folk, it would have been his colour. But with Harsnett, I was sure it was his religion. We all stepped outside, relieved to be out of that dreadful place. We stood on the step, looking out at the wide square. On the other side, in the distance, we saw a coach, surrounded by four riders, pull into Catherine Parr's courtyard.
A visitor for Lady Catherine, I said. Perhaps it's the Archbishop.
If it is, God speed him. True religion needs her help, Harsnett answered.
He walked down the step and unhitched his horse from the rail. I made to follow, but Barrack touched me on the arm.
What's next? He asked. What happens when the sixth vial is poured?
Guy answered.
Revelation talks of great waters being dried up. The Euphrates. How's the arsehole going to make a killing that symbolizes that? Dry up the Thames?
He'll find a way, I answered grimly.
Whatever it is, it'll be some other method of torturing another poor soul to death. Jesus knows what.